720 WGN. Daniel here in for Nick DiGilio until 5 a.m. Talking about the phenomenon of pitchmen, spokespeople, but then also kind of tying into movies as well. 312-981-7200. You can call in. You can text in, and you can add your thoughts on your favorite pitchman of all time. One of our personal favorites. It's one of Dan's favorites. He said that he bought Dos Equis beer, and I'm sure he is not alone because of the most interesting man in the world. But throughout history, there have been so many. And of course, we had somebody from the 847, text in that, the Tidy Bowl man and the Tidy Bowl man, right? I mean, this is a forgotten guy. There's probably a man walking into a nightclub somewhere saying, "Hey, did you ever see the Tidy Bowl commercials?" And maybe he's getting a decent response with that. But so Tidy Bowl Man is one, but there's been so many different ones over the years. 312-981-7200. You can add your thoughts on those. And here's what you're going to win. You're going to, everybody who enters, whether it's the text line or the call, is going to be entered to win a Lou Malnati's pizza. So that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, Lou Malnati's needs, I guess the pizza is the mascot, but maybe they could use a pizza, like Mr. There probably is already a Mr. Pizza. I'm thinking that this far along in civilization, we pretty much thought of everything. When it comes to movies, though, they crank out not only great entertainment, but also pitchmen as well. And the new Batman versus Superman movie is out in the theaters now. And you think of that, you think Superman, well, what's he selling? Well, you know, truth, justice, the American way, right? He's a pitchman for that. Batman, wasn't he the crime doesn't pay guy? You know, he's trying to be out there making the world a safer place, so they do that. But a guy that's going to talk about some of those movies is out in Los Angeles right now, calling us live. It is the one and only movie expert extraordinaire, Blake Stubbs. Blake, welcome to WGN. Okay. Oh, do we got you? Blake, are you there? Let's see.
Hello.
There you go. There we got you. So, Blake, what's going on? First off, and I think it's kind of customary, although it was kind of a rainy day, it was relatively warm, but what's the weather like out there in Los Angeles?
You know what? I've only been here a week, and I have yet to have a bad day of weather. I did the 2.5-day drive, just moved out here this last Saturday, and it's been gorgeous ever since. Of course, I'm getting used to this whole, like, mountains and palm trees, and there's some desert nearby, and it's a very big change from Illinois, which I grew up in my whole life.
So, you're getting used to it. Well, that's tough duty, Blake.
Yeah.
You know, getting used to the palm trees and maybe the ocean there, you know. It's not all positive, though. I mean, although they don't have poisonous snakes or anything or blizzards, but there could be an earthquake in your future, so that would make for
there
some entertaining times. So now, did you move out to California? Of course, WGN listeners were excited to hear you a little bit earlier in the year with us.
Yes.
And we kind of broke down the whole Star Wars phenomenon. You did an awesome job with it. But did you move to Los Angeles just to be closer to movies?
I mean, if you want to talk about my passions, absolutely. No, I actually I had a really great job opportunity come up, and I seized it. And I'm working with some former coworkers on a new business venture, and everything's been going really well. I've been working with them remotely, and now was the time to move. So it just sort of all fell into place. And then, of course, landing here, I had to seize whatever opportunity I could just to get closer to this atmosphere. I mean, I've been around film festivals a lot and things like that, but this is a whole different animal, and it's exciting, but it's also eye-opening. So, I mean, it's, you know, sort of that destination, you know, fill your car with all your stuff and chase the dream.
That's
I'm
awesome.
Doing it.
Oh, so, I mean, it's exciting, probably also a little bit terrifying, but better to go to Los Angeles, so especially when your passions are movies and you can, you know, be, you know, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, right? Or Blake,
sure,
like Cinematic Stubbs. We're trying to figure out, Dan and I were working on some potential nicknames for you, you know, that go along with the whole thing, but better there than Topeka, Kansas, for sure.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't have anything against Topeka, but I'll definitely take the weather out here for sure. And absolutely just the chance to, you know, sort of be walking around. I mean, the other day I met one of my acting heroes, Aaron Paul. I went to a movie screening of his latest independent venture, which is Eye in the Sky. And I was blown away by the movie, and his Q&A afterward was excellent. And I got to talk to him in person. So, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, that would have been a big undertaking, maybe, and get lucky that would happen in the central Illinois area or, say, Chicago, because that stuff does happen in Chicago. But here, it seems very common.
Yeah,
it happens all the time.
You are going to run into so many relatively famous people, right? That your head's almost going to be on a swivel, right? Do I know that guy? Is it somebody relatively famous? Well, we don't have everything in common with Los Angeles, but one thing that I'm guessing Chicago and LA have in common is that theaters are filled with people excited about and sitting in on Batman versus Superman, and you got a chance to see it today.
Yes, I did. What a big movie. I mean, what a big, like, scale-wise, this is the Warner Brothers DC, you know, they're trying to put something together that rivals the Disney and Marvel cinematic universe, and this was sort of their first big step. Well, I mean, they've got big stars in this, it's a ton of money wrapped up in it. It was a lot to take in.
Well, it's a lot, Blake, it's a lot of pressure, too, right? Because you look at what Marvel has done, and they've taken, I mean, they've taken even relatively obscure characters and build them into what have been not only entertaining, but really successful movies. And now you're bringing, you know, you're sticking your big toe in the water here with people. I mean, there's been a lot of Superman movies. I don't know, you know, since Christopher Reeve, if there's been any that have been like really big blockbusters. Batman has been a very successful franchise, but this is, there's a lot at stake. You're right. These are their two big stars.
It is. And also, I mean, the thing that really shocked me about this movie, and I mean, I can do a full review, and if you want to know, like, if you haven't checked, because you've been living under a rock the last, you know, few days, this movie critically is not doing well, but financially, after this weekend, it's doing exceptionally well. So there's a lot of debate about whether it's good, whether it's bad, what is it, you know, what does it all add up to? And for me, the biggest thing that I took away from it is, first of all, we're getting to see Wonder Woman on the big screen for the first time. And we're also getting a whole new interpretation of Batman just flung right at us in this movie. There is no origin story here. We're not taking the Christopher Nolan universe into account. We're not taking the Tim Burton universe or even any of those Joel Schumacher movies into account. This is a completely new take on Batman that amalgamates multiple stories from the comics, and it stars Ben Affleck as the Caped Crusader. So, I mean, it was a lot. I mean, like you said, so much pressure on them. And they're writing the tales of Man of Steel, which was also a debatable comic book film. So in terms of whether or not it was good or bad.
Here's one, and I'm trying to think of like the upsides and the downsides. You know, Iron Man is, you know, he is a first world superhero now. But at the time when that movie came out, he was kind of, you know, like a B-list kind of superhero. You know, he wasn't one of those main guys, kind of cool, right? But the movie was so great. Yeah. But there wasn't like a really, you know, well-established backstory to him. But with Batman, it's so different because, right, you've had almost those comical versions, you know, where you had the Penguin and you had the Joker and those earlier movies, and then you had those kind of dark, grumbling, you know, Christian Bale movies, which were all very successful. How hard was it for you? Obviously, you know, you see a lot of movies, but and how hard would you think it would be for the average viewer to take all those, like set those aside mentally, right, to accept this whole new thing?
Well, and that's the big thing. You know, I was thinking about this the moment I walked out of the movie. Like, why does this movie work and why does this movie not work for me? And not to just compare it to the Marvel universe, but like you said with Iron Man, all of the Disney Marvel, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe films had precursors. You had individual stories that sort of set up each one of these characters, and then we brought them all together, and then we saw how they played, if they played nicely or poorly or whatever. In this movie, they really try to force down your throat this sort of narrative where these two guys, these two individuals, Batman and Superman, have reason to be at worst and at war with each other. And there's some, you know, good teasing that leads up to this big fight, and then this big fight happens, and then that really isn't even all that the movie is. There's more to it than that. So it's one of those things where you kind of sit there and you have to just sort of take it all in and then say, well, you know, what did I like and what did I not like? And I just started thinking off the top of my head, this Ben Affleck Batman, you know, this Batfleck thing that everybody was freaking out about when they cast Ben Affleck in this role, this works for me. I am a big fan of what he did with this character.
Wow.
Now, people can get very defensive about, you know, what they're doing because there's a lot of arguing going on amongst, you know, and to my fellow nerds, I know that you're probably on different sides of the fence on this one, but this Batman is an insanely violent Batman. He is not afraid to mix it up and go beyond the measure, you know, the measures that Christopher Nolan or the Christian Bale Batman did or the Michael Keaton Batman did. But he shares a lot of similarities with all of the different, you know, the predecessors, all the guys that have played this role. there's at least a little bit of love for each one of them. However, he is very much, Affleck is taking and running with this. And he's due to be writing and directing the next film, the standalone Batman film.
Wow.
Which, after this film, regardless of what I think of this whole, you know, enchilada, this Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice thing that I just saw today, I really want to see more of Ben Affleck as Batman.
This thing,
and I hope that audiences feel the same way.
Oh, you're like,
I really do.
This thing that I just saw today. Because the hard part about
yes.
it, you know, Ben Affleck is a guy that we know, right? It wasn't like
yes,
Christian Bale was like almost kind of a mysterious figure, and that's kind of his thing. And he's very good. Is an awesome actor. But Ben Affleck is kind of, he's like your fun, like everyday guy that's there. It was so it's hard to like imagine him being so well received. And he has done superhero before. Didn't he do Daredevil? You know, where he
did do Daredevil, which was very early in when his career exploded, you know, and he was really in the limelight. That, I think, came too soon. And his Matt Murdock was very, the material, like the writing for that was off. The direction for that didn't really work. You know, obviously he married Jennifer Garner later and then just recently divorced her. But at the same time, like, you know, her Elektra didn't really work. Like, that was back before Disney sort of had taken everything in the Marvel Universe under its umbrella that it could, and then really got it all broken down and focused up, and then they hit an attack plan, which was, we're going to do these films, and then we're going to do this big overarching, you know, end of a phase with, like, an Avengers film, and then we're going to do more of those, and then do a phase two, et cetera, et cetera. So, that whole disorganized, hey, we own the comic, you know, property rights to make this into a movie, type thing back when he played Daredevil. I feel like he was more victim of circumstance after seeing this interpretation of Bruce Wayne.
Yeah,
like
he
was that good as both Bruce Wayne and Batman.
Well, you could see him as Bruce Wayne, but yeah, so he was, that would be the reviews, right? That would be him on the press tour. He's like, I'm a victim. I'm a hostage here. Somebody please help me escape. Daredevil. Well, here's the thing, and you kind of intimated that there are those out there, and of course, so many years. I mean, I grew up, I think I was I was Batman like 5 years in a row when I was, you know, probably four till I don't know, I had up 5 years, so till I was maybe nine. So I loved Batman, but you're kind of implying that there's like Batman purists out there. Like there are people that don't want their Batman messed with, especially in these different ways, even though there's been kind of a range of the different characters.
There have, and that's one of those things too. Is that, you know, what I always try to keep in mind when a comic book property comes to the screen is that if this is an older property, which Batman and Superman are two of the oldest. I mean, they're two of the most popular and oldest, you know, comic book franchises. They have gone through so many different writers, through so many different arcs, different artists drawing the character, different looks, different styles, different ways that they speak and write everything that they say and write all of their action. That at some point, there's going to be an overboard, you know, type of way of doing that character. And people are going to have to draw a line and say, I don't want my character, you know, a character I love doing this or doing that anymore. Like, it has to stop. So when people go in to see this movie, they're going to see things and be like, wait a minute, wait a minute, what? And they're either going to love it or they're going to hate it. But that's this movie, tonally, everything he does, I think, fits the tone of what they were going for. So, again, it's a different tone. It's a different whole thing entirely. And the movie's really long. So, you know, it's a little bit over 2.5 hours.
Wow.
And it feels all of 2.5 hours and change. I mean, it really, like, they try to accomplish so much, and it's so ambitious that it does fall short in a lot of different ways.
Well,
like, for me, I mean, I'm a video editor. And so the editing in this movie was jarring at times. You know, I mean, this whole scene is like, I didn't want them to end, but they just suddenly ended. and then all of a sudden, like, we're in another scene, and it's a really short one that doesn't really play into anything else. It's more like just a world-building thing.
Ugh.
And so I'm like, why couldn't we have just been a little more cogent, a little more, you know, tightly cut? And I know that there's an R-rated director's cut that's an extra 30 minutes of time.
Wow.
And trust me, when that comes out, I'll watch it, because I love comic book material being put on the screen. It's just one of those things, like, you can sit me down and I'll watch it, give me some popcorn, and I'm all in. But that would not have played. This movie could not have been 3 hours. I mean, I'm not saying I would have left, but I just would have been like, man, where did the day go? Like, I spent a whole day in a movie theater.
Batman stole a day from you. Crime doesn't pay, Batman. Give that day back to Blake. Well, when we come back from this break, we're going to talk a little bit about the differences in this Batman character that may be either exciting or upsetting some of the Batman purists. We're also going to talk on the Superman character, how different this is compared to some of those. And, of course, Batman on the outfit side. I mean, and you think there has to be some thought here, and you mentioned the profits. You know, I was at Aldi. I think it was earlier today, and they already have the merchandise. I don't know if having it be at Aldi is a good thing, but but they have like the new characters and the outfits and the costume for Batman. It's come a long way from the 1960s, where he's basically wearing, you know, pajamas, right? And now it's kind of this rugged kind of hybrid between sort of an Iron Man suit and the traditional Batman that we know. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to also get into this whole, how does this compare? You know, the motivation, right? Marvel is doing so much with it. Why not on the DC side? You know, they got to get in on some of that superhero action. We've got Blake Stubbs on the line with us, and 312-981-7200. If you've got questions about a movie that's coming up, or questions about this movie and the superheroes, or even your favorite superhero movie that you want us to necessarily mention, you could do that as well. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back. It's Dane in for Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Dane Neal here in for Nick DiGilio until 5, talking about what I think a lot of people are going to be talking about at the water cooler probably throughout the next week or so. Blake Stubbs on live with us from Los Angeles. Got a chance to check out the Superman versus Batman movie. And so, Blake, the Batman in this one has come a long way from the bam pow Batman of the 60s, where he's basically wearing what looked like, you know, kind of footy pajamas. You know, I mean, it didn't look like a very protective suit. I don't think you'd have any real violence. I don't think you could necessarily. Of course, he did have the utility belt, but this Batman's really kind of armed to the teeth.
He is. This Batman is actually a 20-year veteran of fighting crime in Gotham. Okay, he's been around a long time. So he's supposed to be this aged, grizzled, you know, veteran of this personal war that he's been fighting. And you know, the whole thing, like the whole personal tragedy, they showcase that, and that's how this movie opens. I mean, you do get a little bit of that Batman origin story that we've all seen, and it is a very different take, actually, on how it's always been portrayed. But then he's there with Alfred, and Alfred's pretty hardcore in his own right. I mean, he's a bad dude in his own way. And Jeremy Irons, by the way, is one of the hidden gems of this movie. I mean, he's very much on display, but you can walk out of the movie and be like, man, I hated that. And some people will. This is just not a movie for everybody. But he definitely is one of those things where he wasn't, you know, I left thinking about his performance as Alfred. And I was like, that's a very different take on Alfred. You know, he's younger than most guys who have ever played him. And yet, at the same time, he's very capable and physical with helping Bruce Wayne fight crime. And isn't exactly in agreement with him on his course of action against Superman, which is cool. Because, this is a very cerebral movie. That's the big thing it tries to be. Very cerebral from every end of it, for Superman's end. For Batman's end, and Batman, you know, Bruce Wayne, it's kind of hard because Affleck really tackles both ends of that dichotomy well. So, I mean, he's playing with, scenes with a great actor who's helping feed him great material and really get inside the head of that character that everybody knows and loves, which is Batman. And so being so grizzled, he's much more violent. And the fighting style, you know, everything about him, his training regimen is very reminiscent of all the guys who played the Spartans in 300. I mean, he's banging on a monster truck tire with a sledgehammer to train, you know, and things like that. And yet at the same time, he's this brilliant. I think they do a really good job of putting him in the front line as Bruce Wayne in the public and doing the detective work that helps get him, you know, that title of, you know, the greatest detective who ever lived. You know, that's one of the big things about Batman, is that he's also an excellent detective. And there's nothing about him that's super. You know, I mean, he's just a guy who is very well equipped, very well trained, and he's rich as all get out, and he can fund and do what he wants to do. to do what he thinks is right.
So he's a rich guy, and his hobby is, of course, stamping out crime. So it's a grittier version of Batman, and Alfred is kind of expanded beyond the proper butler role, right? And so he is also gritty. So he's like, but would you? Here's the thing. I get it, right? So, but would you want that Alfred living with you if he wasn't helping, you know, getting you tea and all that kind of stuff? I mean, would you want this gritty guy? I mean, did they show that relationship that they could be friendly, or is it still kind of a, hey, you're my employee, you know, make sure that the car's washed when I get home?
Yeah, that, you know what, it's interesting. Every time, I was thinking about it, by the end of the movie, the only time anyone in the Wayne, you know, let's say household, serves anyone anything, Bruce Wayne actually gives Alfred a cup of coffee. You don't see this Alfred, like, bringing him his dinner. You don't see this Alfred, you know, doing things that, you know, are typical Alfred things, like handling the caterer and all that goofy stuff. Like, he's there to work on the Batmobile. He's there helping devise all the technology, you know, making sure that the microphone and his system to change his voice works. He's there to, you know, go over and fly the Batwing or whatever. I don't know what they call his Batjet in this one because they've all had different names. But he actually flies that remotely. You know, I mean, he's a very active Alfred in the fight. Whether, you know, and I don't necessarily mean the fight against Superman, because he doesn't necessarily agree with that. That's another thing. So that's an important thing to take away, is that, you know, Alfred is really not only raised Bruce Wayne effectively, but he's also his voice of reason, and he's a big part of making sure that he's able to do what it is he does.
Well, we're going to get into some of the support roles, you know, that's been going on, not only the equipment and some of the cool stuff in there, but a little bit more on the grittier Alfred. And of course, it sounds good, you know, and you loved Alfred. People aren't necessarily agreeing on the Ben Affleck thing, and, you know, people, and even on the Wonder Woman side of things too, because this is the first time since Linda Carter that we've had Wonder Woman. So we're gonna get into all of that when we come back from the break. We're gonna take a quick break here. It's Dane Neal in for Nick on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Dane Neal here until 5 a.m. in for Nick DiGilio. We're talking blockbuster movies, the scene as far as movies when it comes to some of our favorite heroes, and then seeing them not only go from the comic book up until the big screen as well. We've got Blake Stubbs. He is our blockbuster. Blake Stubbs is on live with us from L.A. Blake, welcome back. And this is, you know, we talked about kind of, you know, upping the ante a little bit. You know, one of the more anticipated characters that people have, you know, it's been beloved for a long time, but been kind of in mothballs for the longest time has been Wonder Woman, and surprised. And of course, you know, we've had, and, you know, listeners can go ahead and text or call in 312-981-7200, texting in, you know, people aren't necessarily excited. They're not warmly embracing the Ben Affleck as you have, and then maybe they got to watch it a few more times, but just not a big fan of Wonder Woman either. Someone said that Caitlyn Jenner would probably be a more convincing Wonder Woman. And I don't know if that's a compliment to Bruce or Caitlin, or if it's criticism for the Wonder Woman role.
I want to be very clear that I think, I mean, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. That's excellent. I'm glad that people are actually seeing and talking about movies in general. I'm glad I'm not the only guy that does it. However, this movie, as flawed as this movie is, I think the performances of the characters are great. I don't think the movie and the script and what they are given to play with is that great. I think that that's lacking. And so if people are not sold on, say, Gal Gadot's performance as Wonder Woman, that's fine. I really know that we have a big film for her coming up soon, which has, as you said, that character's been in a mothball. They have tried to make a movie. I think Joss Whedon, before he did Avengers at one time, was attached to write and direct a Wonder Woman film, and that just kind of fell into purgatory, you know, and then he ended up jumping over to the Marvel side, and now he gets to do whatever he wants because he's made some of the biggest movies of all time. But Wonder Woman is one of those characters that I really want to be huge, and I really want it to be a successful run, that I think they have found the right actress to play the part.
Okay.
Standing next to these two guys in this, there's a shot, even in some of the trailers, she stands between the two of them, and the fact that when she shows up and she impresses both of them, and rightfully she should, she's Wonder Woman, they play her out well. Everything that she does, I mean, you see all of the token Wonder Woman things that make her such a great character. She's brilliant. She's been around a long time because she's practically immortal. Her full-on abilities, you're not entirely, you know, sure what she's fully capable of, And what she shows you in this movie is pretty awesome. I mean, she in the third act, she puts on a show that even leaves the boys sitting there wondering, you know, wow, she's awesome.
Now, did,
within the movie, they're impressed with her.
Did they did they change up like what it is? Obviously, she's you know got a similar costume. She's nice to look at and all that. But if I remember correctly, back to the Linda Carter days, it was she had these I guess bullet resistant wristbands. Number one, she had a lasso that could make you or force you to tell the truth. Number two, so she I guess you could get a lot of confessions from the bad guys. And then didn't she have like a she had kind of a clear jet she could fly. So I don't know what the benefit. I mean, I think just a regular old private jet's pretty awesome, but she had a clear jet, so she would. And that was it, right? That's what she did.
She has all but the jet in this, and her know-how and her ability to just sort of come into scenes and leave scenes. I mean, you're really. I mean, we as an audience know who she is, but nobody else does. And once she makes her full-on unveiling as to who she is and what she's capable of. She leaves an impression, and she's not just a pretty face, you know. And the woman, you know, Gal Gadot is playing. She's a beautiful woman, but she's actually got a lot going on with, you know, just. I'm also, I'm not just a movie guy. I've done a lot of live theater, and I know, you know, I've been trained as an actor, and the things that this woman does in this movie with material that is actually less than. I mean, she needed more to do. In the movie, I think.
Okay.
And knowing that she has a lot coming up, you know, with this big Wonder Woman film that they're going to launch in the next, I think it's a 2017 release. I may be wrong on that. She definitely, I think, is going to, if you're not sold yet, and that's totally fine, because, again, Batman versus Superman is a very flawed movie. You don't have to be sold on any of these things. But I think you will be, or we will be, I hope we all are, you know, as a group of movie lovers, once that movie debuts.
Well, we're letting,
I really do think that she's got a chance.
We want to make sure the listeners know we're talking with Blake Stubbs, movie expert, aficionado, Blockbuster Blake, Cinema Stubbs from L.A., giving us a call live from Los Angeles, you know, where so many movies are made. And here's one of the things, as you look at those, and this is kind of the contrast here is you look at the Marvel movies and obviously they've been very successful. I think on paper it would have been a tough sell, right? But there's so many intangibles that make those movies work, you know, and here's the things that I think as far as the thought process is there's so many things that are thought out because I mean, I'm amazed. Have you been amazed, Blake, by how a movie that was on, you know, 8 years ago still has a tie in to a movie back there? It all intertwines in all these completely unrelated storylines, everything from Captain America, you know, from 50 years ago or 70 years ago, and then all the way into the future with Guardians of the Galaxy. It's so well thought out. But I think the thing that makes those movies, at least for me, as a guy who appreciates that sort of thing, work is the characters they have. Like Chris Pratt is awesome. He is so great. is Star-Lord, man. And then the genius casting was, of course, Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark. And so it brings in these things that on paper, if you just write it down, it doesn't make sense, but it comes to life. So is that the difference here? Is that they've really thought it all out, you know, down the road, and that they've brought in a lot of humor and some really good choices.
For the Disney Marvel side, and I know that, you know, they have somewhere in a room, somebody diagrammed on a dry erase board how that was all going to go down. And I'm sure five or six other people in that room thought that one person was crazy. But when they finally committed and went all in, that for some reason they got all the right directors in the right place. And again, not all of those movies have been great. Okay, like Iron Man 3 doesn't really hold up as well as Iron Man 1. And, you know, once you jump into Avengers, like, you kind of forget Iron Man 3 even happened. But you have these, you know, these moments where we've been very fortunate to get the right actors in the right parts. They've been very fortunate to get some solid writing backing them up. And, you know, I can't remember how many years we are into this now, but like you said, about 8 years. 8 years worth of movie making, and we've had how many films come out, plus the fringe, you know, heroes like Ant-Man, which was excellent.
Right.
Guardians of the Galaxy, which was lightning in a jar. I mean, that movie, if you would have pitched that to a lot of executives, like even James Gunn, who directed it, was like, I don't entirely, I mean, he knows how it got made. Like, he was there. But there's a whole, like, this isn't the type of movie that Disney would back. I mean, this is a big risk. And then it ended up being huge for them. And in fact, still probably one of my top three Marvel films. You know, it's just so fun to watch. And again, the casting. Everything is down to the casting, because if you're going to ride a franchise on someone's shoulders, they have to be absolutely perfect in the role to run this many films in a row. And for some reason, they got it all right. And they're still getting it right. Every time they announce a new casting, I'm like, geez, how'd they, I mean, they nailed it.
In your opinion, Blake, is it somehow that they know something that we don't know? Because on paper, you know, Chris Pratt, that doesn't make any sense. You know, it's like, okay, I guess. Yeah. They saw things in him that no one had seen yet. Obviously, he hadn't, you know, gotten in shape yet, and so now he's got that whole action hero thing going, which he did not have up until that point. And of course, the sense of humor was there. We can appreciate that. But he's off in space as a guardian of the galaxy, and everybody else in the movie is either CGI or pretty much unknown, right?
Zoe Saldana, I mean, and your voice of Bradley Cooper, you know, voice of Vin Diesel. I mean, he's pretty much like carrying everything in that movie. And he's playing well off everybody. Like you're saying, like the known level is a bit questionable on some of them. Like, you know, Dave Bautista, former professional wrestler, is playing the role of Drax, who, by the way, is excellent as Drax. I mean, that guy's come a long way as an actor, but like, I was never a big fan of his as a professional wrestler. I don't even know if he was a big fan of himself as a professional wrestler. I think acting is what he always wanted to do, and I think he's getting to pursue that.
Wow.
So, you know, getting those things and being able to line them up, the fact that Disney and Marvel have been able to do that for so many films in a row and have so many hits and just continue to do boatload upon boatload of money and you know, be able to keep making them. Because, again, if one of these fails, they're not going to make enough. That's the nature of the movie business.
They've kind of got enough.
You can't afford to Blake, keep it going.
Yeah, they've got enough momentum built up now so that, you know, and we've come to love these characters for who they were. But like a Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk, I mean, come on. It doesn't make any sense. And when you look at the beginning one, you know, Robert Downey Jr. is obviously the a great actor. And everyone knows that he's a phenomenal talent. But him as Iron Man was like, really? It doesn't make any sense. But this combination kind of James Bond superhero works so well. But no, I don't know if anyone saw that coming. So none of these, you know, in Hollywood, especially with sequels, and oftentimes looking for kind of a safe bet, like who's going to be a safe investment on the movie side. And these are all like, I think they look sort of risky, but it's all worked out.
See, that's a big thing about Robert Downey Jr., because he really was the first one. You know, he was the first one that really they hit a home run when they put him in that role. And then they knew we got to take another step toward this Avengers thing. That's the goal. We hit Avengers, then we're made. I actually thought he was a no-brainer casting when they did cast him. Now, that's me. I'm a nerd for Robert Downey Jr. I mean, I've seen him in his stuff in the 80s. I know he had a really tough 90s, and then he had that whole comeback thing, and it was pretty big. And then all of a sudden, he was Tony Stark. And then I was sitting there reading, you know, a lot of Iron Man books. You know, I was coming across a lot of Iron Man material when they announced, because my dad always liked Iron Man. Iron Man and Captain America were his two favorites. And so, listen, you know, watching, hearing him talk about it and then watching, you know, Tony Stark was a very flawed hero. So I was like, well, you know, what better way than to take one of those guys who's a phenomenal talent, but has had his go around, you know, he's had to have his comeback. And now he's going to be, you know, the face of an entire movement of cinema, you know, that no one really had really tried success and had success with yet. And Mark Ruffalo, like you mentioned, you know, for a lot of people, that didn't make sense. He's one of those guys where I've always found him just really likable. And then there's been these select films he's in where I'm like, what an outstanding act. I mean, like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. The guy went from Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, where he was a supporting role, and now all of a sudden he's Bruce Banner. And to be honest, he is Bruce Banner.
Yeah.
I love his Bruce Banner. Like, it's just one of those things where they take these chances, and whatever screen test these actors had to get these parts, I would love to see all of them, if they had to do them. You know, for all I know, like Downey Jr. didn't have to do one. But if Mark Ruffalo had the screen test, I'd love to see him, you know, do some early reads and be like, man, the guy had it in the room.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if I were the casting director, like, that's our guy. You know, it's one of those, the talent's there, but the exposure hasn't been there yet.
Yeah.
So it's a hard sell.
And, you know, you don't have a lot of comps, right? You don't have a lot of comparable work where you can say, like, okay, you're a green gamma ray monster that people won't like when they're angry. We've seen you in that before. I think you can do this. You know, so it's one of those things. But you're right, hitting home runs with it. Not even just home runs, just like these are now you cannot imagine those characters as other people. And so when we come back from this break, we're going to hit on another one of the iconic teams. team photo of superheroes that people love and have had really successful film and recent film careers. We've got Spider-Man coming in to Marvel Civil War. We're going to talk about that. And then before we finish up with you, you are definitely going to fill us in on Finding Nemo's sequel, right? Right?
Yes. So, I want to talk a little bit about that. That's big.
All right, we've got Blake Stubbs on live from L.A. We're going to take a break. It's Daniel in for Nick on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Daniel here until 5 in for Nick DiGilio. 312-981-7200. Got a couple ways that you can earn your way into the big drawing for Lou Malnati's Pizza. And 312-981-7200. Text in, call in. You can weigh in on your favorite pitchman, your favorite star. Could be a movie star that's actually selling some extra things, or someone that's kind of just found their place and fame in the world of commercials. Some of the ones that that people have suggested. Mr. Whipple from the 847. Lynn Burton, the Burt Wyman Ford guy. I think that was a pretty good one. I remember those commercials. And then Lily from AT&T, those, I guess she's attractive and she's certainly selling you. And she talks with some different celebrities, I think, too. Lily from the AT&T commercials. I don't know if she's an iconic person yet, but she's, you know, because what if like Flo, right? Flo is big, Progressive. I mean, she's pretty much made her. And those commercials are very fun. Maybe we'll see a full length Flo movie. What do you think, Blake? Full length Flo movie brought to you by Progressive?
I'm in, as long as she goes the full Eddie Murphy route and plays a whole bunch of characters in the same room talking to each other like they did in one of those spots where she was like everyone, you know, in heavy makeup, just playing completely different characters.
I guess she's a
groundling. You know, she's a trained, you know, improv like specialist from out here in the L.A. area. So I'm not surprised that she just, you know, she can do just about anything. So, sign me up. I'm in.
Well, when you first start, well, you mentioned the basically Nutty Professor, right, where she's doing, you know, Hercules. Yeah. She's doing all the characters.
Oh, yeah.
I thought maybe you were going, a different route there where she, because she has done those where she's a bunch of the different characters, right, where she, yeah, where she's, I got the meat sweats and that kind of stuff, so.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need an action figure, right? Once you get the merchandising down. So there are, I had, when I was a kid, I had the Spider-Man thing you strapped on your wrist and you had a suction cup and you pushed button and it shot across the room. So Spider-Man has been a big part of a lot of our lives. And now again, on the big screen with Marvel Civil War.
Yeah, that actually is a huge deal. And I know I'm not the only person in the world that knows this, but so Sony owns like all of the cinematic rights to Spider-Man. You know, Disney is doing all the Marvel films, but they can't do Spider-Man. They don't own it. Back when Marvel was, like, almost bankrupt, they sold off properties to different studios. That's why Fox has Fantastic Four. You know, Sony had Spider-Man, and Disney basically got everybody else, except the X-Men. I believe Fox is still with X-Men as well. But I guess this last year, like, when they were getting ready for Civil War, and if you're familiar with the comic art Civil War in the Marvel Universe, Spider-Man plays a very big role in that. In unveiling who he is. I'm, you know, Spider-Man, my name is Peter Parker. That's like a huge thing. Well, I guess Sony and Disney had enough meetings and made everybody happy enough that we're actually going to get Spider-Man in Captain America Civil War, because we've seen him now in one of the trailers. Nicknamed Underoos by Iron Man himself, he takes the vibranium shield and then says hi to everybody. And just like, you know, the internet, we can't have nice things, so we have to fight about the design of the costume and everything. But let's all be really happy that Spider-Man is going to be present in this movie coming up, regardless of whether or not the costume is, you know, Silver Age Spider-Man or the new modern era Spider-Man. I honestly couldn't be happy. Now, that's the geek in me. I don't know about everybody else, because I, too, had one of those wrist shooters, except mine did silly string.
Oh, okay.
A mess. But you know, I mean, it was I was excited when that happened. That was a big unveiling for me. So I couldn't be more thrilled that that's going to happen this year.
And you know, you made it back in the day when, as far as if you were, you know, trying to climb the totem pole of prominence as far as a superhero, is when you had your own underoos. So when
Absolutely. When
you were included in the underoos universe, I mean, you knew you were big.
Exactly. I mean, I think I had everybody, mostly Batman, but I think I had just about everybody, because, you know, the BVDs or the Hanes or whoever made them when I was a kid. That was huge. Like, every kid had Superman underwear because we all wanted to be superheroes. I mean, that's a big thing. So, yeah.
Well, the you know, Disney is so kind of associated with their cartoons and the animated features and things like that. And then, of course, you know, one of the one of our favorite, our family favorite, you know, movies, of course, Finding Nemo. It never gets old. We've seen it so many times, and it is one of those, and I think it was one of those early films that even though it was animated, it was still made like adults could enjoy it. There was enough of the yeah. commentary or the jokes that were like, wow, this really works. And Ellen is awesome as Dory. So we're finally going to see the long-awaited sequel to Nemo.
It did. It took 13 years. I was just looking it up because I was like, when did Nemo come out? It was like 04, 05. No, that came out in 2003.
Wow.
So, I mean, this movie, you know, yes, you've seen it enough. And we've always hoped that she would just keep swimming. Well, guess what? She's done. And it's going to, I mean, this is about Dory finding her family. The trailer that they released was her waking up and saying, I need to find my loved ones. Where are they? And so it's going to be her, you know, quest to find her loved ones and really show everybody what family is all about. Now, like you just said, it's one of your favorite family movies. They look like, based on synopsis and the trailer that I've seen, because it's Ellen doing her thing, and she is outstanding as this character. She's going to be backed by the likes of Idris Elba, Michael Sheen, Diane Keaton, Dominic West, and yes, I'm reading the IMDb page, but like I wanted to make sure that at least Albert Brooks was in there, and he is. So he's back right. as Marlin. This is an all-out, you know, Disney animation, Pixar, the whole deal. I mean, 13 years in the making. I'm glad it's happening. There was more to that universe at the end of Finding Nemo, and I knew we weren't done with it then because it, you know, it's so touching, it's so captivating, and here we are. We're coming up on a sequel. Now, here's the thing about Pixar. They have a very strict motto of not making movies that suck. And I don't think this one will because, you know, sometimes the sequels, they falter. They're not as good as the original. That's always the worry when you see, you know, something two or the second or whatever. This is a movie that's going to be driven by some great people that have played great characters. And it's based on what they've shown us so far, it's the same characters, it's the same universe, and we get to go back there. Oh. So I think, you know, that Disney Pixar element is going to, you know, see this movie through, and it's going to end up being a lot of fun. Hopefully it makes a bunch of money, and, you know, if it's really good, we can get a third one. I don't see any reason why we can't have that, you know. I mean, I'm not the one who hates on sequels if they're fun. If they're sequels that are trying to really forward momentum as part of a series or something and they just don't work, I'll put them in the trenches with the rest of the garbage and yell about them like everybody else. But stuff like this, I mean, you know, I can't wait to see stuff like this. This is always fun to go to the movies and see because that's really what going to the movies should be. It should be fun. Finding Dory is that.
And a movie like this is absolutely a can't miss. And you look at, you know, the people involved are going to make sure that it is. They wouldn't be doing it. None of these people need to make a movie just to make it 13 years later. They're not depending on, you know, on Nemo money. Right. So this is you know, it is going to be good and it's going to have everything that we loved about Finding Nemo, which is, you know, great, lovable characters, a little bit of drama, some suspense, maybe some danger. Right. Thrown in there. Yeah. It'll be nice to have Dory find not only her memory. Right. But her family as well. So, Blake, before we let you go, and it has been absolutely awesome, let the listeners know how they can follow what it is that you're doing, how they can follow you on social media, catch up with you and kind of get your insight into the movies just like we did.
The best thing to do, honestly, would be to follow me on Twitter. My name is @BlakeStubbs. That's BlakeStubbs. If you're one of those people that didn't like Affleck's Batman, please hit me up. I would love to talk more about it because keep in mind, I'm coming right out of the movie. Didn't really get a lot of time to digest and I went right on the air, but I was thrilled with what I saw. And it seemed to be something that, you know, we were getting some discussion on. So I want to know what people think. Feel free to follow, hit me up on that. I'm always going to respond. But just remember, I'm on Pacific time now. And while Chicago is my favorite city in the world, I'm out west at this point.
Well, that's where you need to be. You got to have your hand on the pulse of everything that's going on in the movie world and in Hollywood. Is blockbuster Blake Stubbs. Thanks so much for being with us here on WGN tonight.
Thank you very much. Also, go Hawks. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Without question, go Hawks. All right, it's Dane in for Nick until 5. We are late for a break, and we're going to take it. It's Dane 720 WGN.